Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the FBN Holdings 9-month 2014 financial results conference call. Following the brief overview by FBN Holdings management team, an interactive Q&A session will be available. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. Bello Madiccio, Chief Executive Officer of FBN Holdings. Please go ahead, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of all of us from FBN Holdings PLC, we welcome you to this presentation of our unaudited 9-month financial results for the period ended September 30, 2014. Beginning with the macro environment, let me just say that real GDP has continued to experience positive growth with growth numbers showing 7.1% in 2014 as against what obtained in 2013 at 7.0%. At the same time, we have also witnessed a tapering of inflation to 8.3% after we had experienced a 6-month consecutive rise. Now, truly, external reserves have dipped from the previous levels of 43.5 billion in 2013 to about 39 billion, occasioned basically by the introduction of shale oil in the United States and the slowing of demand for commodities in China as a result of the slowing economy there. Now, for the banking industry, let me say the good news is that the Central Bank of Nigeria has released the regulation for financial holding companies industry framework, which essentially means that today we are operating under very clear rules that define how we should operate as an industry. We are also happy to report that on the NDIC side, there has been an announcement for the reduction of premiums payable by banks from 0.5% to 0.35%. So clearly, we have seen some positive vibrations from the regulatory environment, even as we witness or we recognize that the Central Bank of Nigeria will continue a very tight monetary stance, both as relates to the issue of CRR and also on the MPR, because of the need to maintain a tightening of the economy as we experience increased spending as we move towards election. So having given you a background on what the macro environment outlook is, let me say that we have continued to refocus our business model, riding on our market leadership position, such that we have been able to raise the level of our total assets by 14.8% over the corresponding period last year to 4.2 trillion. We have built our net loans position by 25.8% to 2.0 trillion, while also building our deposit base by about 4% to 2.9 trillion. Of course, we have also continued on our drive towards customer activation, new customer acquisition, to the point that we have grown our customer base to 9.4 million as of September 14, representing 12% increase. We have continued to drive efforts in pushing transaction banking such that we drive trade finance in a way that we also are able to enhance our fee business, at the same time also improving the level of collections within the group. Now, I must also say that we have maintained very stable asset quality, such that our NPL ratio has come down from about 3.6% in the corresponding year to about 2.9% as at Q3 2014. We have also continued to maintain a healthy capital adequacy ratio, which presently stands at 20.3%. Now, I would also like to say that over the last quarter on quarter, we have been able to maintain steady growth in our operating income, as can be seen on slide 7, while also at the same time acknowledging that cost-to-income ratio has inched up slightly, and this is as a result of regulatory costs that are actually chargeable based on asset size of an institution. So all in all, let me say that in the last three quarters, we have been able to report return on average equity pre-tax of 2.4 on a pre-tax basis, and after tax 1.8. Return on assets, 2.4 pre-tax and 1.8 after tax. Return on average equity on a pre-tax basis is 20, while on an after tax is 15.4%. Now, I'm happy to provide you what I'll say is just a snapshot of our income statement, highlighting some of the key indices of our performance over the last three quarters. We have been able to grow our gross earnings considerably from 296 billion to 333 billion, representing 12.5% increase. At the same time, both net interest income and non-interest revenues have also grown remarkably over the period, while we have also been able to bring down substantially our credit impairment by about 15%. So as a result, we are delighted to report a profit before tax figure of about 73.7 billion, which is an increase of 3.6 billion from the previous figure of 70.1 billion that was reported in September 2020. So this represents 5.2% growth over the corresponding period. So I think in summary, both our top line numbers and our bottom line numbers over the last three quarters have improved appreciably and remarkably despite the very challenging and the very difficult operating terrain under which we have had to operate as a group. At this point, I would like to invite you all for any questions, for any comments that you will have on our presentation as well as generally on our group. Thank you.
If you would like to ask a question, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. As a reminder, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal. Our first question today comes from Muya Oni of SBG Securities.
Thank you for the presentation. I have three questions for you. The first is that I'd like to understand the impact of the new policy on foreign borrowings will have on your operations. So there's a new policy limiting foreign borrowings to 75% of shareholders' funds. And then the next question is to see if there's an update on your London mining exposure. So should we be expecting any provisions from that exposure? What's the current state? And then the third question is just trying to understand what's driving the change in your ROE guidance, because as at half year you were guiding between 17 to 18%, but now it's down to 14 to 15%. So I'm just trying to understand where you think we should expect the pressure. So will it be non-interest income or interest income, or how we expect to be looking at it going forward? Thank you.
Okay, I would like to talk about London mining. That's your second question. Indeed, we have an exposure to London mining out of UK subsidiary. It's a syndicated loan to an iron ore mining company. And as we speak, this loan is being restructured a lot of activities around making sure that this loan comes performing again. I can't disclose full details regarding this loan, but what I can assure is that we are not going to have any provisioning. We are not going to have any provisioning for the year regarding this loan.
Regarding the question on the impact of the new circular on foreign currency borrowing, we have evaluated our position. We are fine. Indeed, we do have scope for incremental borrowing in foreign currency. Regarding the question on ROE, we actually do see some downward pressure around our net interest income. So again, that's where we see the pressure. We expect given all the work that's been carried out on our next non-interest income, we expect that to continue to grow over time. But between our year ahead, we do see some downward pressure on our net interest margin.
Thank you.
Our next question today comes from Abbas Barkhorder of Schroders.
Yes, thank you very much for the call. I have just a couple of questions. One is the capital adequacy ratio you quote of 20.3%. I just that I assume is calculated under the Basel I rules, but following the circular that the CBN put out in August in terms of what's eligible and what isn't. I just wondered if you have an estimate of what that ratio would be under the new Basel II framework, which is meant to be introduced quite soon, and where that leaves you in terms of your capital adequacy, and related to that, your options for increasing capital, whether it's reducing a payout ratio or Tier 1 equity raise, given you've already raised quite a lot of Tier 2 this year. And the second question is just around the exposure to potential currency devaluation, both from assets and liabilities point of view, and how it would impact your profits if there was a sizable devaluation early next year, or what the impact would be on asset quality for some of your borrowers, because obviously there's been a lot of lending in dollars. Across the banking sector, and the question of what a devaluation would do to the borrowers and their ability to service those loans. Thank you.
Thank you. Our capital adequacy, you are correct. The number that we've shown included in our presentation is based on Basel I Capital Accord, because that was the accord that was in operation as at the reporting date. Regarding where we'll be under Basel II, we will be fine. To your thought, the third strand of your question, regarding capital option, we are carrying out a number of initiatives internally. We are doing balance sheet optimization. We are also going to be increasing retention rates. So, for example, we are carrying out a 9-month audit currently, where we intend to capitalize most, if not all, of the profit for the 9 months. So when you look at our capital position, we will be fine.
Fine
as we will be above the
minimum regulatory limit, including the possible 1% surcharge for SIB when it becomes effective.
Next year.
We are pretty much on board to meeting regulatory requirements, for sure.
Okay.
So your question about the impact of the devaluation on asset quality, the way our portfolio is structured, we have a natural edge to FX devaluation. That is, we only give FX loans to customers with FX cash loans. So that mitigates the impact of devaluation. In a few cases where we have given FX loans to obligors with local currency cash flows, it's because we believe that they are very strong. We have a couple of top telecom names in this segment. So overall, we don't see a significant impact on asset quality as a result of devaluation. We can also talk about short-term trade finance facilities, which tend to be in foreign currency, but these are very short-term, 30 days, up to 90 days turnover. So essentially, overall, we don't see any adverse impact on asset quality. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question today comes from Kasina Mishankina of UBS.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. I have several questions. Could you please indicate your loan growth for 2015? Also, could you please comment on your borrowing plans in the Eurobond market for the near to medium term? And sorry if I didn't hear it, but what is your CAR ratio under Basel II methodology as of third quarter?
The capital under Basel II will be above the minimum regulatory requirements. Like was explained by the CFO, we are currently carrying out a nine-month audit of the financial numbers for the group, and the intention also is to capitalize retained earnings arising from that exercise, effective end of September. That pushes us under Basel II to above the minimum regulatory requirements and also meeting the additional 1% buffer under the SRB rule or the SRB regime of Central Bank. And that's before the year-end audit itself, which would also give some room. We intend to effectively manage dividend payouts and increase retention as a means of capital management, because we do not believe that in the short run, given so many factors, lack of debt in the market, liquidity in the market, we do not believe that in the next, in the short term, the next 1 year, we do not believe that we'll be in the market for fresh tier one to raise. Does that answer your question on capital adequacy?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, you asked the question on loan growth for 2015. We are guiding at no more than 10% for now. Essentially, our focus will remain rebalancing our portfolio towards the less competitive part of our business. Institutional banking and large corporates, essentially, we have very thin margins. There's a lot of competition there. So essentially, we are rebalancing our portfolio to the retail end of the business. So we are not looking at aggressive loan growth in the next year to come. Thank you.
Regarding your question on Eurobonds, looking at our financing plan for next year, if we're going to come to the market, we're probably going to be in the syndicated loan market, and there are no immediate plans to issue another Eurobond.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question today comes from Marcel Genius of Sloan Robinson.
Hi, gentlemen. A couple of questions from me. First of all, why do you think the T-bills in Nigeria aren't yielding more at the moment, considering that the really tight monetary policy as well as the risk on the currency?
Why is T-bill yield?
Well, to answer that question, it's largely a function of the central bank's monetary policy stance. It is slightly contradictory to the extent that they've drawn a very hard line with respect to defending the currency. So naturally, you would expect that they would engender a higher interest rate regime as expressed through allowing higher yields on government security. Thus far, they have resisted that, though we have seen some slight signs that perhaps they are loosening that stance, where in recent times we've seen their open market operations rate go from 10.8% now to 11%. So perhaps they're moving back towards that direction. But clearly, it does suggest that we probably would see higher rates in the short term, especially if they continue aggressively increasing reserve requirements.
Sorry, I couldn't hear the first part of your answer. So why aren't T-bill yields higher than like 2012, for example, back at 15%? Why are they only 11%?
Well, like I said, it's largely been because of the central bank's own management of the monetary policy dynamics.
What does that mean exactly? I mean, in practice, can you just give an example?
They have limited the rates at which they issue the bills, right? And have thus
right.
artificially kept the T-bill rates low, because they conduct their auctions, they issue bills via auction, and they determine where the cutoff rates are. So they have successfully so far held those rates at these kind of levels artificially. Though we have seen in the last couple of weeks a slight relaxing of that, where they've allowed the rates move by about 25 basis points. So perhaps we're moving to a more normalized environment given their stance on foreign exchange.
If you allow the rates to close, to be determined by the market, clearly it won't be as low as it is now. So the argument here also is that this is being determined by central bank for some other objective, including efficient management of rates, which they believe should not be as high as the market believes it should be. So if you allow those rates to float, determined by quote, certainly it will be higher than what it is. So what you see now is central bank deliberately keeping that rate at that level for reasons that we just explained to you.
But the reason why they can do that is because they can manage the currency just with cash reserve ratios. Is that right?
Not exactly. Bear in mind, the central bank's issuance process is twofold. There's a primary auction, which is largely limited supply, and there's a secondary market activity undertaken via their open market operations, where typically you would truly express, or the market would truly express the market view on rate. Now, because the open market operations issuance window is much larger and much wider, the central bank can influence that by determining the cutoff rates, which is what they've done. So that, and to the extent that they've been able to manage it down to the 11% range within their purview.
Okay, and the second question is on deposits. Why aren't deposits growing, and specifically, why aren't cheap deposits and current accounts growing? So your current accounts have declined by 7% year to date. Your term deposits have grown by 15% year to date. Overall your deposits are flat. So what has happened with the historical, preference for raising free or cheap deposits and investing that money into T-bills?
Okay. Fundamentally, two things. Number one, you've generally got a higher interest rate environment, right? So what we've seen is there's been some natural migration where clients that typically would have been in current and savings accounts are increasingly migrating into higher rate term deposits and government securities, T-bills, right? So we've seen significant amounts being invested there. The second thing is you've had the impact of the increased CRR requirements on public sector deposits. Bear in mind that the bulk of the public sector deposits are in current accounts because they largely are tied to collection activities or banking activities of governments, right? Now, because of the increased requirements on those public sector deposits, there's been a deliberate focus to de-emphasize our growth in that segment. Because the reserving costs on us have been high. So you've got that double whammy impact, which has limited the growth, overall growth in deposits.
And finally, and I'll finish here and let others ask questions. Is why did you rebalance your balance sheet towards risk assets away from T-bills? Is it for higher yields? And are you, and you know, obviously that cost that comes at a cost of capital and risk and provisions eventually.
Well, I would. The reason why you're seeing that rebalancing is tied predominantly to the monetary policy stance of the central bank. You will also notice that reserves of the central bank have grown significantly. We've effectively almost doubled in this period. And note that with increased reserve requirements on public sector deposits, those are essentially funded by liquidating T-bills. So it's not a like-for-like rebalancing from in growth in new loans. What you will see is largely in the fact of the incremental reserve that have depleted the liquid assets and which are predominantly T-bills.
So this wasn't intentional. This is just the fact that reserves are growing and you have to sell T-bills because these are the liquid assets.
Correct.
And yet you still
okay,
have obligations for facilities that are decisively approved. And that's why it's so
okay. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Our next question today comes from Sharat Dua of Charlemagne.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for taking the time to speak to us. I wanted to, first of all, clarify a couple of things that you said earlier, so I'd appreciate it if you can be as specific as you can be. In the current circumstances, are you saying that you have ruled out a Tier 1 equity raise for the next 12 months?
Yes,
and
yes,
you have.
Please.
Okay, fine.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes.
And on the dividend, in your presentation, you said we can go or we can retain as much as possible. Now, on the call, you're talking about potentially capitalizing the 9-month audited numbers. I'd just appreciate a bit more clarity. I mean, are we potentially talking about zero dividend for financial year 2014? Is that something which you believe is viable? Or how would it work based on Q4 numbers? Potentially you might pay a dividend out of Q4, but not out of the first 9 months, if you could just be clear on that.
We haven't said emphatically that it will be zero dividend for 2014. What you just said is that there will be increased retention of capital from recent earnings. We haven't said it will be zero dividend, and I'm not sure it will be zero dividend under the present circumstances. What I also said in specific terms is that whatever dividend that will be paid will be determined after the full year audit. And based on 9-month audit, we will take advantage of the retained earnings for the purpose of the Tier 1 capital till the end of the year, at which point a final decision will be taken on the appropriate dividend payout.
Okay, and there was a circular from the CBN last week, I believe, where they were looking to actually cap dividend payouts for certain banks. It may not apply to you given what you're talking about for next year anyway, but are you able to disclose what risk rating the CBN has given to you?
Based on where we are today, the bank is risk rated above average.
Okay. So you would not be allowed to pay more than 30% anyway?
No. You need to be, you know, there are two conditions tied together under that requirement. But today the bank is risk rated above average.
Okay. All right, thank you. Moving on from that, a couple of my own questions. Looking at the results, the FX income saw a huge 10 billion contribution in Q3. And I just wanted to understand, you know, where such a big surge has come from. I mean, that's obviously well ahead of full year numbers for the last several years. Is this a function, presumably, of currency volatility? And how sustainable do you think it is, or could it even reverse in the fourth quarter?
It's actually a combination of several variables. You know, management has always mentioned the fact that we've implemented a transaction banking model, and our trade business has gone up and is expected to continue to go up. So in that wise, we expect some trending upward of our revenue from FX. We've also benefited from currency volatility, so that component of it may not necessarily repeat itself. But given what the outlook of the macroeconomy is also, we do see a certain degree of volatility going into the year ahead. So there are three strands contributing. Some will continue, for sure, given what we are doing around transaction banking. The volatility, again, is a function of the market.
Okay, fine, thank you. I wanted to understand why your tax rate is significantly higher than your peers. You've come in at 24%, I think, or 25% for the 9 months, and you're guiding to 20 to 25% for the full year. Your competitors are in the main 17, 18%.
I mean, like you said, it's a provisional figure, but essentially this would be due to the impact of assessing the recoverability of our deferred tax asset position. But again, by the time we move closer to year end and we're able to determine more accurately, we'll be able to do it. But essentially, we are being proactive and being conservative by taking into consideration our net position from the deferred tax asset.
So it's not a question of not being efficient in terms of tax management, but it's an assessment of the recoverability of the deferred tax asset. But in terms of normal corporate tax levels, we are as efficient as you can imagine.
Okay, thank you. Cost of risk, you've come in at 0.9% for the 9 months. You've guided still 1 to 1.5% for the full year. I was quite surprised that you say there should be no provision at all for London Mining, given what's going on there. I would have thought, even if you're not having to, certainly not writing it off, but I would have thought some provision might have been necessary. Maybe you can just give a little bit more detail around that. And also, there's one other loan which I know has been in the news recently regarding FBN, and that's Atlantic Petroleum, if you could comment on that as well.
Let me take the London Mining first and foremost. There are ongoing efforts to restructure the facility with an obligor that is going to continue running the operations, but we cannot disclose more than this at this point in time. We are very emphatic that in the next 1 week, this matter will be put to closure, but we can't provide details under the present circumstance. So what is certain is that the outcome of that exercise, which is almost certain in itself, would not lead to taking any provision on London Mining. And you have to understand that we can't disclose details. On Atlantic Energy, I can confirm to you that it's a reserve-based lending. As we speak today, there's no past due obligation on that account, and we are very optimistic that the account will remain performing.
Okay. But you're still expecting the cost of risk to go up for the rest of the year?
We still retain our guidance rate of 1 to 1.5%. We believe that there should be no surprises, and we should not expect any surprises in terms of cost of risk, based on our understanding of the portfolio that we hold today. So I'm very optimistic
okay.
that we'll receive that guidance.
And final question from me, if I may. You did mention tilt in the portfolio for next year. So you're saying 10% loan growth. You're saying less focus on the highly competitive large corporates and big institutions and more of a retail tilt. I mean, how big a swing could that be, and you know, how significant could that be as far as cost of risk and NPLs are concerned?
In the very short term, if you are talking about next year, that swing is not likely to be very, very significant. We are mindful of the fact that it's not going to be prudent to move the portfolio from, say, large corporate to retail in a very, very short time. So we are looking at this on a very, very gradual basis, on a slowly, because we are also mindful of the possibility of incurring higher credit losses if we moved into retail too quickly. So we are doing this very slowly and deliberately. Currently, we have retail contributing about, say, 18%. Maybe in the next 1 to 2 years, we don't expect it to be more than 22% or something like that. But if you look at our numbers, the percentage of the portfolio contributed by the large corporate institutional has actually dropped fairly significantly. I think from December last year it was about 46%. Right now it's 41%. So you can still see the impact of the rebalancing that we're talking about. But like I said, this is going to happen very, very gradually. Thank you.
And let me just say that what drives us at this particular point in time is maintaining a healthy institution. Liquidity, capital adequacy, soundness of the portfolio, and quality of assets are very, very important. If you will agree with me that it's extremely very easy to grow your loan portfolio. But what we are doing is to be very, very measured and calculated in a manner that the growth is very slow and steady without disrupting our activity. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Ankit Mittal of HSBC.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the presentation. And just one thing on the cost-to-income ratio. Do you expect cost-to-income ratio to go up like you have revised your targets upwards to 65 to 67? Is it only due to lower NIMs and lower non-interest income? Or is it also because of higher operating cost? So, like, what are your operating cost growth targets for this year and next year?
Can you please take the question again and more slowly?
You have revised your cost-to-income ratio upwards from 62 to 65 to 65 to 67%. So, is it only due to net interest income, or is it also due to like higher operating costs which you are expecting this year and next year?
It's actually a mix of both. We mentioned earlier on in the call that we do expect some compression in our net interest margin between year end. Again, on the operating cost level, as you are probably aware, we've actually been executing a number of cost containment strategies. Those things, they do take time before they come into fruition. So some of the things we are doing now, the impact will be better first in the course of 2015. So it's a combination of those two variables that you mentioned.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question today comes from Sole Solenke of Renaissance Capital.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Thanks for the call. I just have a few questions. The first one is, when Inu was speaking, or probably was the CFO, you mentioned that the risk to Q4 earnings is margin. So what exactly is the risk to margins that you're referring to? Is it an asset yield issue or is it funding cost? My second question is probably for the chief risk officer. Can you kind of tell us more about your downstream oil and gas exposures and the risk management in here in case you do see a devaluation of the currency? And can you also give us an update on your ICT NPLs? My third question is, so earlier on you spoke about your risk assets growing faster than liquid assets so far this year. So can you help me understand, when you talk about balance sheet management with respect to capital optimization, you know, how do these two, you know, how do these two relate? My final question is, I hear everything you've said about deposit growth this year and the challenges, you know, cash reserve ratio, etc. So what's the outlook for 2015 with respect to deposit growth, and what's necessary for you to achieve, or should I say get that deposit number going higher and also improving the mix going forward? Thanks.
Please go ahead. Please go ahead. The line is reconnected. If you could please repose the question.
Hello?
Hello? Hi.
Did you get all my questions, or do I need to go through all again?
No, please. Kindly go through all the questions.
Okay. My first question was on net interest margin. You spoke about the risk margins in Q4. So is this more an asset yield issue or a funding cost potential challenge in fourth quarter? My second question was on downstream oil and gas exposures. Can you just run us through the risk management in here in case we see devaluation of the currency? And also if you can give us an update on your ICT NPLs. My third question was, so if your risk assets are growing faster than liquid assets so far this year, can you help me understand, when you talk about balance sheet management with respect to capital optimization, how do these two relate, or how exactly are you thinking about it? Then my final question is, I've heard the issues you've mentioned around deposit growth this year. So looking into 2015, what's necessary to get your deposit number higher and also improving that mix next year? Thanks.
Regarding the question on net interest margin, the main driver of this is we've done and we are doing a number of foreign currency lending where the margin, where the spread over our foreign cost is quite narrow compared with the kind of margin that we do get from our Naira portfolio. So essentially, that is what is driving the margin down, if you see what I mean.
Okay, the question on the ICT exposure, ICT, I think that is telecom. Like we disclosed at the half-year conference call, we mentioned that we have a couple of telecom names that we are working on. The largest of the loans is actually very well secured, and we are still in the process of resolving this issue. It's taking a little bit longer than we originally anticipated, but I'm very confident that by the end of the year, this loan will be fully resolved. Like I also mentioned, it's well secured.
And in the worst-case scenario, the collateral is available for sale, and it's over 150% cover in relation to the size of the exposure.
Okay. Then you asked the question about the downstream oil and gas exposure in relation to the display exchange rate. Okay, in relation to the value. Okay. Essentially, our downstream oil and gas exposure is mainly to the very big names in the industry, and these people have the wherewithal to weather any storm regarding exchange rate devaluation. Yeah, since 2 years ago, we have reduced significantly our exposure to marginal players who would believe are more vulnerable. So the way we structure oil and gas exposure, especially to the very big players, I mean, we are very comfortable with them. So we don't insist on equity contribution, we don't insist on collateral, we don't insist on too much of a tight structure. But by the time we are dealing with the medium-sized players and the marginal players, we have a lot of restrictions in place, including high equity contribution, warehousing arrangements, collateral, and so on and so forth. So we don't think that the impact of devaluation will be significant to this portfolio. Thank you. Have I answered all your questions regarding the asset portfolio? Is there anyone left?
Yeah, that's fine. I'm okay with that.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question.
Hello?
Sorry, did you have a follow-up question?
There are some other questions that haven't been answered yet, though.
Sorry, please go ahead.
So there are questions on risk assets and balance sheet management and how that relates to your capital optimization. And my other question was on, you've spoken about the issues you're having with deposit growth this year. What's your 2015 outlook and what's necessary to get deposits growing and also improving the mix going forward? Hello?
To your question on balance sheet management, I said balance sheet management is something that we're actively doing. We've actually explained earlier on in the call that the misalignment in the growth of our liquid asset portfolio or our government security vis-a-vis our loan portfolio was essentially on the back of the need for us to fund the cash reserve requirement that was imposed by government. Again, so going forward into the new year, we'll continue to focus on optimizing our balances, ensuring that we also allocate as much as is possible, or as much as allowed by the regulatory pronouncement, more liquidity, more of our resources into government security. So what you are seeing today is a reflection of the active management of the capital and balance sheet, but equally influenced significantly by the regulatory stance on cash reserve requirements.
If I may add to that, our guidance on loan growth is actually quite modest. Even for next year, we are looking at no more than 10%. So, like you said, you know, Volksbank has the largest loan book, and the focus is not to grow loans. And I think this will have positive impact on our capital adequacy. Thank you.
Regarding your question on deposit, part of the strategic initiative that we are currently implementing is that we've set up a transaction banking system. And this is actually standing on two pillars. There's trade finance and there's cash management and liquidity management. So again, we are deploying both human and technology to improve our ability to offer state-of-the-art cash management solutions to our clients. On both sides of this pillar, both of them will be resting on significant cash collection. But for you to be active in the trade business, clients have to lodge their money with you, so you are generating cash flow, CASA, and the same thing goes with the collection. So that's one strand that we're embarking on that will enable us to continue to grow our deposit base. We have also, and we are still carrying out significant improvements on our service offering. So when you enter our branches all across our network and you get a good service offering, this we also believe will attract more retail deposits. So just two of the various initiatives that we are implementing to enhance our deposit mobilization.
Thanks. So do you think going into next year you can actually grow at about 10-15% on deposits? You know, and I'm also thinking, what's different about your trade finance and cash management solutions versus what your competitors are doing? Because this is actually what we tend to hear from many of the other banks in terms of what they plan to do to grow deposits. What differentiates your plans versus what your competition is doing?
Going into next year, we are still finalizing our 2015 business plan. So the growth assumption for next year is still being debated, so I can't say precisely what we are going to sign up on. But whatever growth level that we plan for next year will be something that we believe we can accomplish. To your question around our transaction banking model, today, First Bank, we have the largest loan portfolio in the industry. So that means we naturally, we are a leader, and all that is required of us is to also just ensure that we increase our share of wallet of these our existing clients as far as state finance activity is concerned. So even without even bringing in incremental customers into our business, if we just increase our share of wallet as far as state finance business is concerned, then we will be able to accomplish our growth, we would have accomplished our growth strategy. So we are quite comfortable that the transaction banking model is potentially a game changer for us as far as non-interest income is concerned.
And if I would add to that, all we are talking about is, no matter how efficient you have been as an institution, there are things you can do that make you more efficient. So the platforms we have introduced on transaction banking and collections essentially would delight our customers, because they are essentially things that could make us have a bigger share of existing customers' wallets. And we have no doubt in our mind that having seen the first run and having started the live implementation of it, we started seeing the impact on customer satisfaction and increasing volume of business. Now, we benchmark against the market leaders in this area. I would believe that there is enough room for us to close the gap between the market leader in trade and collections and what we put on the table. And what we've done essentially is to look at those things that have caused us to lag behind and we'll fix those problems. And we started seeing increases in collections and in trade finance activities. There's no doubt in our mind that we know what we are doing and this will deliver the results for us. What would change in terms of deposits? Historically, Test Bank has always grown its deposits and doubled its deposits in the average of 3 to 4 years. Historical growth rate supports the forecast of 10 to 15% that we're putting on the table, in spite of the constraints that we have seen in the market. So we are pretty much assured that we'll be able to achieve our guidance number, given that historically we'll be able to achieve that number. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Ndwisi Obike of Stanbic IBTC Pensions.
Hello. Good afternoon. Thanks for the presentation. I have just 3 questions. My first question, I would like your opinion on the CBN policy directing banks to stop, to henceforth stop the bank, the any bank assurance agreement they have with insurance company, especially as it relates to your insurance business. How you think it's going to affect your operation, especially your non-interest revenues? That's my first question. Second question is, I appreciate some more clarity on your planned acquisition of the Kakawa Discount House, or the major acquisition, how that fits into your overall strategy. And then my last question is just, I noticed that you reviewed upwards your non-performing loan ratio between H1 and now from 3 to 4% to around 5%. So I'm asking, do you expect an uptick in our loan impairment in Q4? And if you do, what sectors should you, do you have concerns about? Thank you.
Well, on Kakao Discount House, let me say the decision to acquire Kakao Discount House is essentially because, number one, to provide us entry into the merchant banking space that we have reviewed as part of our strategic plan program, that it's a necessary step for driving our investment banking business. So we decided as a group that rather than probably get FBN Capital to just go straight to apply for a merchant banking license, since within our group we have a discount house that is available for sale, that it will provide us the right vehicle, if you will. And in this process, let me say, even though we are at early stages, we have actually advanced in terms of concluding the sale, and bringing Kakao within the purview and grouping of FBN Capital, such that it becomes the avenue through which we will undertake our merchant banking activity. Now, the point is that by entering to the merchant banking arena, there are a number of revenue pools which in the past we have ignored, but which based on analysis that have taken place during our strategic program appear important for us. Number one, the prognosis was that without a merchant banking license, you will not be able to have a balance sheet to be able to, number one, undertake foreign exchange transactions.
and also trading in fixed income. And based on, I think, the numbers that have been highlighted in terms of what appears, what is the standard globally, this contributes about 40% of the revenue pool. So we believe that in addition to being involved in DCM, ECM, project finance, those are revenue pools that could not be ignored. So that is the basis upon which the decision was taken, that we need to reinforce our merchant banking business, and in doing so, let's acquire a vehicle that already exists within the group to enable us to use it as an avenue to get into merchant banking.
Okay. I'll take your question on the statement of the NPL guidance of 2.4% to 3.5%. As you may have noted, NPL for quarter three was 2.9. Now we have a couple of exposures that we are monitoring very closely. They are on our watch list, and it's taking longer than we had initially projected to resolve some of these loans, including loans to a CDMA operator, an infrastructure provider for the telecoms industry. So we are just being a little bit proactive, and if we are not able to resolve these loans that we have put on watch list, we'll probably proactively classify them towards the end of the year. Thank you.
On your last question on the impact of the CBN regulation on bank assurance, we have complied with that particular circular. The impact on our business is minimal. However, we continue to engage with central banks to explain our own approach for cross-selling across our group, and we believe eventually we'll reach an agreement with central banks, because again, what we are doing, we do not believe that we are piling insurance risk. But as it stands today, minimal impact on our group's results, and then what we're still engaging with the central bank.
Question, please.
I will just take the next question now from Lanre Boluru of Primera Africa.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Apologies if this question has been asked. Been on the road, so I just got on the call a few minutes ago. Just wanted to know, regards to the new CBN policy, in regards to your credit risk rating, where do you stand right now? What's your rating? Also, in regards to your capital adequacy ratio, where are you in terms of Basel II and Basel III? Also, in regards to the new policy with foreign borrowing, how much of an impact will that be on your current business? And also, what's the outlook on Tier 1 capital for the bank? Thank you.
Okay, like right here, we've dealt with all these issues, so I will just run through quickly. As far as the capital adequacy ratio under B2B3 is concerned, we are above the regulatory limit. We are also carrying out a 9-month audit, and we intend to increase our retention so that over time we do have sufficient Tier 1 capital. So that deals with that. In terms of CRR, we are currently rated above average based on the last examination that was conducted. As far as regarding the circular on limiting the size or amount of foreign currency borrowing, we have fine, and we still have scope to do additional or incremental foreign currency borrowing. Thank you.
All right, so you're saying increase your retention rate. So I'm assuming your payouts are going to be lower than usual this year.
If you look at the current regime, then it actually does make sense for an institution of our nature to focus on endogenous capital growth rather than expending incremental resources. So we are going to be increasing our retention rate eventually.
Okay. Okay. In regards to Tier 1?
I had mentioned earlier on that in the short run, meaning in the next 12 months, we do not intend to raise fresh Tier 1 capital.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Tunde Ojo of Harding Loevner.
All right, thank you very much for the presentation. About three questions from me. The first is on the enforcement of the Treasury single account. You have it in your presentation slide. Can you help me understand how that would impact Fed Bank, given that you have about 20% of your deposit in public sector? That's number one. Number two is a follow-up to a question that has been asked earlier on the net interest margin guidance for Q4, where you expect to be impacted because of foreign currency loan mix. Is it safe for me to assume that you plan on getting more foreign currency borrowing in the fourth quarter and that's why that mix is going to shift or not? Like, I'm trying to understand that. Then the last question for me is on the follow-up to a call earlier where we talked about NPL and also cost of risk. I'm mixing that up. First is, I think the CEO mentioned that you don't expect any surprise on the cost of risk in last quarter, so your guidance is fine. Then I also heard during the call again that you increase your NPL guidance because there's some exposure on the infrastructure telecom area that could be provided for. Am I missing something there, or are you comfortable with your asset quality now or no?
This is the bank CEO. We have not increased or changed our guidance rate on cost of risk.
Okay, and how does that...
We still have a guidance rate of 1 to 1.5%. And presently, we are within the 1%, 0.9%. What I said earlier on was, and I still repeat that, we do not expect any surprise on our loan book, and we do not expect any surprise on our cost of risk.
Okay.
To answer your question on net interest margin, I had mentioned earlier on that we will not be issuing a new euro bond. But that the bank will most probably be in the market for syndicated or club loan to raise incremental USD.
In the fourth quarter, right? Right.
It's not qualifying for capital, so it's a normal.
It's in the ordinary course of business.
Ordinary course of business. It's straight deposit without any capital treatment.
Okay, in this fourth quarter.
Well, like I said, it's the ordinary course of business.
If it's open, it may be, but we're looking over the next 6 months, kind of.
Okay, the reason why I'm asking that is because you expect the net interest margin to decline in the fourth quarter because of increased foreign currency lending. And I'm wondering, is that going to be from a new funding base or not?
And that's what we are saying. On a need basis. So we are going to. That is the plan. What you have said essentially is the plan. So it may or it may not happen. But most likely that will happen in the fourth quarter. And that is why we are giving that guidance. If you see what I mean.
Okay, I get that. Okay. And the last question is on the Treasury single accounts and the impact on your bank.
The impact of the TSA has largely been not significant so far, to the extent that what we've seen happen is just an increase in the velocity of the flows of public sector funds. Bear in mind for us, when you look at our own deposits, our significant public sector deposits are in foreign currency, which are excluded from the TSA. But what we see as the CBN and the government agencies get more efficient, we just see the number of float days continue to reduce. I'm already seeing that around distributions of things like SAC and other large systemic payments for government workers. So it's more a forward-looking thing that we expect that as they continue to implement, it will start to really impact on banks that are active in that space.
Okay, and when is the implementation of this CSA going to start?
We just got a circular from Central Bank now that it's starting, its run is commencing in the next 1 week. It's almost on.
The next. Okay.
It's almost on.
Thank you.
Our next question today is a follow-up from Marcel Genius of Sloan Robinson.
Hey, it's Marcin Genius from Sloan Robinson. I have a couple more questions, and let's try to focus on the bright side, and let's stop with this negativity. You know, this year has been particularly difficult. Can you imagine a normalization of environment in next year or maybe the year after that, where regulatory changes don't completely hamper your growth and profitability? I mean, are you looking out to after elections as a catalyst or as a change, or do you think that next year will be still hard? And what do you think could change in monetary policy after elections?
Well, we believe that a lot of activities and a lot of decisions are being held back awaiting the outcome of the election. We believe that after the election, there will be some changes in fiscal environment, and that may also affect the monetary environment. However, in terms of very harsh banking regulation, we believe that the central bank has come up with most of what they have on their sleeve. We do not expect any surprise from central banks in terms of monetary policies, but there may be some reactions to fiscal changes that may necessitate central bank coming up with some pronouncements. For instance, shots may have to be taken on the deregulation of the petroleum sector, the exchange rate possibly, but at this particular level, forecast, and this is based on our own internal analysis, that there may be some changes in the fiscal environment. The impact of some of these things will be evaluated depending on how quickly they happen and how boldly those decisions are taken. On our side, we believe that the worst is over. We've been able to navigate ourselves out of the regulatory headwind that we saw in 2013. As you will see that effectively from the Q3 results of 2014, we have posted positive growth relative to 2013, which means that we've been able to weather the storm of the regulatory headwind. All things being equal, we expect to be able to sustain and improve on the performance that we are seeing now, and the only direction in which our performance can go under the present circumstances is north, which is upward. And I like your approach and your introduction in terms of looking at the positive. I think we've done well, bearing in mind that we're able to recover lost ground, and we are now on the positive growth trajectory on all indices. We expect the results of Q3 to be sustained, and towards the end of the year, we'll be able to surpass our 2013 numbers based on what we have seen so far. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And just on, you know, and the other point I wanted to ask or make is the NIM under pressure because yields on individual types of assets have declined, or is it under pressure because of the mix change, because of the reserve requirements going up, and because of the euro bond that you issued that you had to put into dollar lending, which is lower yield? Or let me ask the question differently. You know, is a like-for-like yield on loans the same as last year or similar to last year in lari?
Let me We have not reduced pricing on our loan book. And so the pressure in NIM is not as a result of reduction in earnings on the loan portion of the book. However, in a situation in which we have to discount treasury bills to fund deposits under the cash reserve requirement,
you understand that those sterilized deposits in central banks are non-interest bearing. So that's a source of pressure on our net interest margin.
Yep.
You're also right in terms of the composition of our loan book. Having gone to the market to raise some dollar liquidity, you would also agree with me that the margin on Forex lending is not as high as you would get on Naira lending. And so that reduced margin, which is expected and normal from foreign currency lending, combined with the reduction in loanable funds or investable funds arising from increased sterilization of cash reserve requirements. And these are the factors that put pressure on the net interest margin.
And just to put things in proper context, if you look at the size of our CRR today, and if we are just paid a TB rate on that particular balance, potentially we are looking at the incremental revenue of about $260 million on an annual basis. The size is actually humongous.
It's about $450 billion naira. Sterilized in cash reserve requirements
at zero
to net interest.
The impact on our revenue is significant. It's about $45 billion incremental revenue that is being lost.
It's huge. So what do you think needs to happen in Nigeria next year for this monetary policy to be relaxed and finally for you to be able to bank the country?
So let's engage offline outside this conference, because I'd like to share your views also, because it's something that worries us too. But I would not use those words on my regulator. I just believe that it's huge. I will agree with you that it's huge.
Right. Okay, so who should I email?
Our head of investor relations.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Our last question today is a follow-up from Kazinia Mashinkina of UBS.
Hi, sorry, just have a small follow-up question. Could you please indicate your NPL ratio for First Bank of Nigeria as opposed to FBN Holdings?
Can I have your question again?
Yeah. Could you please indicate NPL ratio for First Bank of Nigeria? I can only see NPL ratio for FBN Holdings in the presentation.
Okay. It's about 2.9% also. But you also know that First Bank Nigeria contributes over 82% of the risk asset of the group. So the NPL ratio of the bank tends to drive the overall NPL ratio for the holding. So for the bank, it's about 2.9 as at September 2014.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
As we have no further time for further questions, I would like to hand the call back to Mr. Bello Machido for any additional or closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, basically, in closing, we like to thank you very much for listening to our presentation and for the questions and answers that we have taken. But we would just like to reiterate that looking at the share price of FBN Holdings today, trading at 0.9 times book and also at 5.9 times PE ratio, clearly you can see that we are trading at a significant discount, and for lack of a better word, that discount alone highlights the fact that we are a very strong investment proposition, especially taking into consideration the strong, stable earning base of this group, driven by its very strong retail network. So we believe that investors will look at this possibility. They will also look at it also from the standpoint that what has kept the prices of bank holding companies low in the marketplace has been the former Pension Reform Act of 2004, which precluded domestic pension funds from investing in companies that have less than 5 years trading record. I'm happy to report that a new Pension Reform Act has been passed in 2014, which has removed that impediment. And soon, the domestic pension funds will be able to come into the stock of our holding companies, including FBN Holdings. So we believe with this development, definitely the share price of our company
will closely approximate its true intrinsic value. So on this note, and on behalf of all of us, we thank you very much for our conference call.
This concludes the FBN Holdings 9 months 2014 financial results call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.